Today's episode of the Dirty Sports Podcast is brought to you by Chill Boys, the official underwear sponsor of our show, Dirtballs. The holiday season is basically here. No matter what holiday you celebrate, you're going to be giving gifts, and I have the perfect gift to give your loved one or for yourself, a fresh pair of Chill Boys underwear. They come in a variety of styles, I should say. The Chill Boy Bamboo Boxers, the Performance Boxers, the Boxer Briefs, just to name a few. I love the Chill Boys. My brothers love them. I have four brothers. They were just telling me the other day how much they love the Chill Boys underwear that I've given them. They're so soft, they're so cool, and they feel great on your junk. It's time to upgrade your undies, boys. Use discount code DIRTY20 at chillboys.com to save 20% on your first order. That's DIRTY20 to save 20%. Go right now to chillboys.com, type in DIRTY20 and save 20%. Thank me later. All right, let's start today's show.
Welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast. I said, welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast with Andy Booth, the Angel Prano. Welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast. I am your host, Andy Ruther, coming to you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, with my co-host from Los Angeles, California, Joey No Chill Prano.
Hello, Andy.
What's going on, man?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm excited. They can probably tell. I got a new microphone for myself. Yours should arrive tomorrow. A little upgrade time on this Zoom sesh.
Yeah, look at you sounding all radio. WNBC.
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 It's snowing here, Joe.
Is it?
Yeah.
You're dreaming of a white Christmas.
You know what sucks, though? It rained for like 8 to 10 hours before that, and it's snowing hard, but it's not sticking because the rain happened before it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's an early season snow for you.
It's a tough scene.
I don't know whether or not it's snowing here because we are once again locked down.
That California quality of life, fam.
Yeah, California quality of life. We're locked down so Gavin Newsom can have all the restaurants to himself.
What?
For socialism meetings and wine tastings.
It's a mess though, man. It's a mess out there.
Yeah.
Like, at what point I subscribe to the LA Times. So these are my three go-to, just so everybody knows. As far as
Wall Street Journal, the LA Times,
and
the Washington Post.
Cincinnati Inquirer, the local. Okay. Hey, I'm here, man.
Do the local.
I gotta do the local.
California news, you get your business news, you get your Chili news, covering all the bases.
There's a great article in the Wall Street Journal today about your Mets.
Ooh, it's exciting.
I'm going to have to give you the old Andy Ruther username and password.
Is it still RUG123?
No. Like, you're going to be masturbating reading this article.
Is it just about how Steve Cohen has all the monies and this really wants to spend it?
Yeah, it's basically, these aren't your old Mets. And it says everything you said. This isn't the Wilpons. We have the richest baseball owner in the history of the sport. All the things that they're going to do and how he trusts. He openly says in the article, look, man, I stopped playing baseball very little. I don't know anything about baseball. I'll let the baseball minds handle it. So he seems like...
Yeah, he's already brought Sandy Alderson back in, who's responsible for drafting every great player currently on the New York Mets.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been really awesome. If you're a baseball, even if you're not a Mets fan, you should follow him on Twitter. He just literally yesterday replied to Put It In The Podcast, which is the Mets podcast that I guest on every once in a while. Like, he's mixing it up with fans on Twitter. He's very open about like wanting to win in the next 3 to 5 years, following the, you know, Cubs / Dodgers move of new ownership, new life, new championship runs. And I'm hoping that in addition to the success of the team, that he just brings new life to like everything around Citi Field. I mean, you were there. Basically, they have the bars that are connected to the stadium, like the one like McFadden's, which you try to sneak Beverly into with Dan Gormley's ID. And other than that, it's literally like chop shop garages. Yeah. And for years, they've been talking about redoing that whole area, but the Wilpons are just cheap and they couldn't secure, you know, real estate licenses or real estate contracts or buy the properties or whatever. And I'm just hoping that there's nothing there. Like almost more exciting than a short-term championship would be like a long-term revitalization into like a ballpark village type of thing that so many stadiums that sit in the middle of nowhere have, where they build something around it just to support the fans that are there.
Yeah, the article's titled "Meet the Mets, the Most Interesting Team in Baseball." Oh,
Meet the Mets.
I'll hook you up after the show.
You know, Meet the Mets is a little Mets jingle.
Sure. Andy. Yeah.
And back in the day, it's a great little jingle, but back in the day before cell phones and before like, you know, pinging people with your location, you'd be like, "Hey, dude, meet me at gate C before the game." You don't know if you've gotten there before them, if you've gotten there after them. So the next thing you know, you're standing outside a gate waiting for one of your friends to arrive. And after about 9 to 10 minutes of hearing Meet the Mets on loop, you will go insane. Like you will, you turn into the Joker.
Well,
your friends arrive. You're like, "Want to know how I got these scars? I stood outside gate C. My dad said, Meet the Mets."
Well, Joe, was there a part of you that was going, having a mini insane attack, watching your Giants really have a battle against a backup Cincinnati Bengals quarterback yesterday?
Well, obviously, it was a game the whole way through. But when Daniel Jones was in there, he was playing really well. I mean, this is however many consecutive games now without him turning over the ball, when he has been the biggest turnover machine in the league since he came in, besides, you know, Carson Wentz and Jameis Winston, who like do it at ungodly levels. But he was playing really well. He had 267 yards or 270 yards passing without turning the ball over in early in the third quarter when he goes out. So as much as they certainly weren't pulling away, they were moving the ball, they were running the ball well, and he looked fantastic. But then when he goes down and we've got to turn it over to Colt McCoy, it got really dicey. And now, even though the Giants are in first place, you know, you can't really feel confident. I think 6 games wins the division.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think you can feel confident that the Giants even beat the 2 teams that they would maybe even be favored over going forward if you don't have Daniel Jones. Now, one of those teams would be the Cowboys, who they have in week 17. So you're going to need to win that game if the Cowboys make any sort of push to win 6 games as well. And hopefully Daniel Jones will be back for that. But the upcoming schedule for the Giants is tough. I mean, they've got Seattle coming up. They've got Arizona after that. I mean, the Eagles have the toughest schedule of the bunch. So it's kind of crazy, but like, it's the Giants, it's Washington, like it's still 100% anybody's division.
Well, judging how the Cowboys did on Thanksgiving, I would think no one would have any confidence in the Cowboys, from not only the players, but the coaching staff. And seriously, Mike McCarthy, how does this guy have a job? Like, I just don't get it.
Just terrible decisions throughout the game. No, just no personality to the team. You know what's funny is everybody, I think people were hating more on Jason Garrett to offensive coordinator of the Giants than they were to Mike McCarthy as head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And Jason Garrett has been great for the Giants as an offense coordinator. I mean, it started out really, really rough. Obviously, they always say implementing a new offense takes time. But now the Giants going to a run game with Wayne Gallman, who has like emerged as like, oh my God, we could have this two-headed monster if Saquon Barkley comes back. But actually, the thing about Jason Garrett so far for the Giants is like on those third and twos and third and threes, all those plays that always killed you watching Giants Cowboys games, the little tight end into the flat, the little running back out of the backfield, he's working them all for the Giants and it works. Meanwhile, Mike McCarthy's in there. There was a couple of series in a row where Alex Smith throws a pick. The Cowboys run it back to the four. In three plays, they go negative 6 yards and kick a field goal. Washington gets the ball back. I forget what Washington does in their possession. But then Cowboys get the ball back and turn it over on downs on their side of the field. It's like I'm obviously very critical of the analytics guys and the desperation and the whatever. But you're going to kick the field goal when you've been given a gift interception and got the ball at their four, but you're going to go for it on your side of the field two possessions later?
Well, my thing with Mike McCarthy, as I watch the Packers last night, you can't help but think of all these years of futility and how Aaron Rodgers
was not
only wasted, but I also want to give credit to him, as you know. Like, he continued to play at a MVP level so many years in spite of the buffoonery of Mike McCarthy. And I agree with you as far as wasted. It's crazy. Like, if you're a Packers fan, talk about wasted years of fandom.
And that's the thing is, you know, we talk all about across sports, whether it be wins, rings, whatever, you know, from LeBron and Michael to Brady and Manning to whoever, like yesterday, people going at us with Goff QB win stats. You're like, bro, are you joking? You have to watch these games and you have to realize, like, when people judge Aaron Rodgers versus other guys that he's been in the league with and go, oh, well, you know, what has he really done? It's like, what has he really done? He's made them a competent football franchise with an incompetent head coach. And I've said it before about, you know, Brady versus Peyton. Like, if Peyton Manning was and swapped positions with Tom Brady, I truly believe that the Patriots don't lose a Super Bowl for a decade. And that's not taking anything away from Tom Brady. What that's doing is saying, I actually think that, you know, Manning is better. And he was just in a worse situation. And, you know, in a way, obviously Tom Brady's 43, but we see what happens now that Tom Brady is in Tampa Bay and, you know, people are now saying, oh, Arians offense and blah, 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 blah.
Were you listening to what Romo was saying about that?
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, I found Romo to be just like a Tom Brady apologist yesterday.
Well, I thought it was interesting. Romo was basically saying he is used, obviously, to the different scheme that New England ran of a lot of play action, a lot of, you know, the quick slant passes, the hot reads. And you took that as he's an apologist?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, the term system quarterback always gets thrown around like it's a diss. When, like, it's the highest compliment, you know what I mean? The highest compliment is you fit a system. Joe Montana was the West Coast offense. Joe Montana and Bill Walsh together changed the face of football for three decades. But Tom Brady, like, the thing about the Tom Brady in the Belichick system that is fact, but also, like, kind of used against him is whatever is, yeah, Tom Brady was doing the dinking and the dunking and the quick slanting and the running back out of the backfield and the whatever. Everything that our boy Barry McConaughey does when he puts together a Tom Brady highlight reel. Tom Brady won all his Super Bowls and all his things with a very, you know, dink and dunk offense. And obviously, the year where they go 18-1 and lose to the Giants when he gets Randy Moss and they're chucking the ball downfield shows you that he has the ability to, you know, go deep and be like, be a high powered offense. But also, they didn't win that year.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing about Brady is getting judged right now at 43, but he's also getting judged without Belichick. And I think that those go hand in hand, and both are as, you know, much of a factor in his sort of lack of success. The thing that I'll say about Tom Brady, though, that I think he's getting exposed a little bit is, and I said this a few times in the last few episodes, is Tom Brady, as compared to some of the other all-timers, struggles with pressure. Has, always will. Tom Brady is essentially what I've always said about, like, why you don't draft big program quarterbacks.
Well, you know who said that? I don't know if you caught it. His former teammate, Rodney Harrison, was talking about that during the Sunday Night Football pregame or postgame, whenever it was. I thought it was a good point. He specifically said that. He said, look, man, if you put pressure, especially from the front line, on Tom Brady, he said this, he will turn the ball over. Yep. And that's what you're seeing this year. You're seeing a lot of fumbles, a lot of bad interceptions.
And that was how the Giants beat him, and that was how the Eagles beat him, and that was how, you know, that's how he lost to a Ravens team. That's how he lost, like, in the times that Tom Brady has been beaten in his career, that's how you do it. And the thing is there are, and again, I have no argument for Brady's legacy. He's got all the stats, he's got all the accolades, he's got all the rings. But the bottom line is, like, when you look at him on film as compared to other great, like, there are bigger, way more holes in Tom Brady's game than there are in Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Patrick Mahomes.
I think, you know, body language is important, right, in sports. And the Bucs are getting a lot of airtime, whether it's prime time or the main game of the week. So we're all watching them as a country, as a football world, whatever you want to call it. His body language or kind of his facial expressions this year versus previous years, to me, it's noticeably different. It's in the past, you have the safety valve of Bill Belichick, of a Josh McDaniels, right? You have
the defense.
Yeah. And you can just see it, right? Like, you can see it, how he's reacting on the sidelines or how he's getting into it with Mike Evans. And
like, they're already talking about Tom Brady's never been swept in his division until now.
Yeah. So it's a little different. And I was one of the people who overhyped them. And I think, you know, they're so porous from the defensive back standpoint. They have a great D line, but I mean, look how, obviously it's Patrick Mahomes, but I mean, wow. Just wow. Yesterday were they exposed.
Yeah.
And
you know, people like this is, I'm not trying to make it the Tom Brady truther episode, but all the people who have done the imagine Brady with weapons, Brady has all the weapons. I don't know how much more weapons you want him to have.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, Bill Belichick's complaining about how they have had to spend their money in New England now. But when you're spending money on a defense and you're spending money on an offensive line to protect Tom Brady and you're spending money on Brady, you don't have a lot of money left over for weapons. And if you have an offensive scheme that's dink and dunky, you don't need them. And Tom Brady, I'm sure right now, would trade all of these guys for Edelman and a great defense and a great offensive line and a scheme that works.
Yeah. And on the other side, holy shit, Kansas City at this point, like, in my opinion, and I could be wrong and I don't know what the stats are, how they're playing right now, probably on both sides of the ball. This is the best I've seen the Chiefs right now since Patrick Mahomes became the starter. I just think they are, to me, it's not even close as far as the best team.
Is there any, do you have any sort of fear that like they're playing a dangerous game of every game is close, every game is a drive away from being, you know, flipping the score, that like catches up with you? Or do you just think that they come playoff time, they turn it on?
Well, obviously, you know, there's a sense of complacency when you, like yesterday, you build another big lead and your offense, you know, Tyreek Hill had 200 yards.
I don't understand.
The first quarter.
Tyreek Hill was pacing to break the single game record.
They took the foot off the gas pedal.
But I feel like they blow that game out. I feel like they blow the Bucs out if they go, our only goal for the rest of the game is to have Tyreek Hill break that record.
I agree.
No one could cover him.
Why no one could cover him. I mean, dude, I put this on the rundown. I think it's a discussion. I think the Andy Reid, and I don't think it's talked about enough because of how great Patrick Mahomes is. I think the Andy Reid, though, Patrick Mahomes pairing, the combination, dude, I don't think we've ever seen anything like this. And we just talked about Tom Brady, so obviously people want to say Brady Belichick, but this Mahomes Reid, because obviously Reid is the offensive side of the ball, it's a perfect match to really, in my opinion, take Mahomes' potential to where it's at right now, which is maximizing how good of an athlete and how good of a player he is.
Well, I think what's amazing is that Andy Reid's whole career, in a way, was, I mean, he's certainly been a successful NFL coach. Obviously, he didn't reach the pinnacle until he got to the Chiefs and he got Mahomes. But, like, the guys Andy Reid has made serviceable quarterbacks and the guys that Andy Reid has made, like, star quarterbacks in a way, like, there was moments where they were talking about Alex Smith, MVP candidate on the Chiefs. Alex Smith isn't a great NFL quarterback. Donovan McNabb, for a long time, people were like, Donovan McNabb is one of the great NFL quarterbacks. It's like, Donovan McNabb wasn't one of the great NFL quarterbacks. And, you know, Andy Reid's offensive scheme made all those guys, like, look great.
Yeah.
You add into that all of those guys were limited physically in what they can do. And don't get me wrong, Donovan McNabb was a great athlete. But in terms of what Patrick Mahomes is able to do, like, basically you have Andy Reid's offense, which is like the screens, the short passes, the all this, whatever. And then you add on top of that, at any point, this guy can escape and throw the ball 70 yards downfield. And it becomes kind of unfair.
Oh, it's totally unfair.
And in a way, it's like if Andy Reid had spent his whole career doing Bruce Arians thing, throwing the ball down the field, throwing the ball down the field, throwing the ball down the field, you put Patrick Mahomes in it, it's like, oh, is this the Raiders offense? We're going to go long every time. But you've kind of handcuffed Andy Reid into thinking inside, like, you know, cooking with just five ingredients. And then you take, you know, him and you put him in a world-class kitchen and you go all the ingredients. He's like, man, I can make fucking anything.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Basically Andy Reid went from, he was at a Waffle House his whole life and he had the basic ingredients and the basic standard meal you would get at a Waffle House. And then you put him in some fine dining in the heart of Beverly Hills and you're right. And he is just really utilizing those guys to their fullest potential. But Patrick Mahomes, like, take that final.
Patrick Mahomes is a freak. And, like, if you were weighting it, it's more Patrick Mahomes than it is Andy Reid because.
Sure. But together.
Yeah. But again, he has everything. He's got mobility. He's got touch. He's got the arm angles. He can throw the screen game. He can throw it long. He can throw it downfield. He can run when he needs to. Like, he is complete. A quarterback I've ever seen that can do all the things at all the levels that he can.
And he's got the smarts. I don't think we talk about that enough. Take that final drive. He knows when to get down. When he had that run, you know, his mobility, and then he gets down inbounds, he's just a smart quarterback. And he's only going to get better as far as that stuff's concerned.
And what's crazy is, you know, Patrick Mahomes has essentially never played a bad game. There's never been a bad Patrick.
Really? He hasn't had one bad.
Like, he's had less than Patrick Mahomes-y games. He's had average games. But he's never had, like, a zero touchdowns, three turnovers, a one touchdown, three turnovers. Like,
Do you know that, or are you just guessing?
No. They've literally said that on the broadcast yesterday. Like, he's never had, like, what you would call a bad game. Now, maybe I'm wrong if somebody wants to correct me. But, like, that, I think, is what's almost more important than how high a level he can play at is like, what's if the basement is like an above average NFL quarterback, you're always going to have a chance to win a game.
Yeah. I just put Patrick Mahomes' worst game, Joe, into Google. Doesn't seem like he has. I mean, there's an article from October 5th. So almost 2 months ago from The Ringer titled Patrick Mahomes still hasn't had a bad game.
I mean, yeah, and we know he hasn't had a bad game in the last 2 months.
It's amazing. I mean, it really is what he's doing. And to be honest, it's almost unfair. Like, it's almost – when I'm watching that game yesterday, I'm saying to myself, like who's going to beat them? I want to discuss that. To me, the biggest threat for them in the – I want to talk AFC – I think it's the Titans, because to me, the formula to beat the Chiefs is
keep
what
them off the field.
Exactly. Derrick Henry, feed him. You have a
you talk about this. There's Steelers fans right now that are losing their minds, right? Because they're undefeated and they have a good D line and they have a whatever. But here's the thing about the Steelers is like, Patrick Mahomes has never had a bad game.
Yeah.
Your defensive line isn't going to cause Patrick Mahomes to get sacked seven times and throw one touchdown and throw three picks.
Totally
agree.
It's
not going to happen. So now we're talking about some sort of Roethlisberger to Claypool, Mahomes to all his weapons shootout. Bye. You lose. Yeah. You get nothing. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, the Titans have certainly looked shaky at points this year. We both predicted them to win that game. They blew out a Colts team that they knew they had to beat to, you know, control the division. But I mean, do I give the Titans a great chance of beating the Chiefs? Of course not. But I agree with you that their best chance, the best chance to dethrone them in a playoff game is to run the shit out of the ball and limit the amount of time that they have on offense.
Yeah, and were they beating them at halftime last year?
Yeah.
At least into the second quarter, right? Yeah. The Titans.
Well, the game the Chiefs, you know, the Chiefs were down 24-0 to the Texans, and then
sure,
and then it was close. I don't know if they were,
but I think
up at halftime.
I think, yeah, the Titans, that's what I'm saying. Like that, you know, where you control the ball with Henry. And, you know, at this point, he's not going to win it. But I don't think it's crazy to say that Derrick Henry deserves some MVP votes.
Yeah. And I agree with you, because without them, what are they? You know, and there's been a lot of talk that, you know, the way Tannehill came in and changed Derrick Henry, and you know, it's a team philosophy. You got to have a guy who's going to protect the ball and whatever. If you're going to run the shit out of the ball, you can't turn the ball over and be a slow it down offense. And that's why the Titans, you know, do pose, even though it's not a real risk to beating the Chiefs, probably the best, which is if you're not going to get a Patrick Mahomes 2-pick game or 3-pick game, then a 1-pick game or a 1-pick and a 1-freak fumble or a bad special teams play. Like, if you're going to beat the Chiefs, you know, you've got to win, even if it's close, the 3-2, there's Vince Lombardi, there's 5 big plays in every game. And if you have 15 drives on each side of the ball, then those plays don't factor in as much. But if
you limit
the amount of possessions entirely, one pick here, one muffed punt there, could be the difference in a game.
Now, Joe, sticking with the AFC West, what happened to your Raiders?
I don't know if it was West to East. I don't know if it was. But, I mean, they got – first of all, they got trounced.
Trounced.
And here, let's talk a little bit more, as much as I'm disappointed and saddened in what the Raiders did. And unfortunately, I didn't watch a ton of that game. But
it was bad.
But the Falcons don't make anybody happy. The Falcons don't make their own fans happy. They don't make other – like, the Falcons are the spoilers for across the league. They only win games that they're not supposed to win. They lose games they're not supposed to lose. Their fans hate them. Other teams' fans hate them. I mean, the Falcons are like the coal in your stocking. The Falcons are a razor blade in your Halloween candy. Like, the Falcons don't make anybody happy. You don't win it. You don't lose enough games to get high draft picks. You don't win enough games to compete. It's like unbelievable.
The Falcons have never been right since they blew that 28-3 lead. I know there's so many memes and jokes, but it is the truth.
Yeah.
That they have not been right as a organization since that Super Bowl. Because you're right. They're so hot and cold. I've never seen a team this many years in a row be this unpredictable week to week.
Even last year, you know, the end of the season, they're beating the Niners on the road, but they can't get in the fucking play. Like, there's never been a team that constantly infuriates any single person that watches. Like, if you're a Raiders fan, you're upset yesterday, obviously. They basically derail your playoff hopes for at least a moment. And if you're a Falcons fan, you're like, why are we winning games?
That's a huge loss, though, man. I'm looking at the standings right now.
Yeah, Raiders go down to what, ninth?
They're down to ninth in the current AFC standings. They win that game. They're right there with momentum. It's a loss they couldn't.
They've won huge games this year. They beat the Saints. They beat the Chiefs. And they can't beat the Falcons.
And they almost
blown out.
But both sides of the ball, offensively, defensively.
Yeah.
Did you see that run by Brandon Jacobs, though? Did you see that run?
No.
The one where
certainly not Brandon Jacobs, who's not Brandon retired. And very slow.
Josh.
Josh Jacobs.
There we are. There's a Rutherism for you. He
also, before you even move on, I have really important news for you.
What?
Bill O'Brien is not the coach of the Houston Texans.
Oh, he's not?
No, he's no longer the coach. And before you mock Dan Quinn's defense for giving up this Josh Jacobs run, he's also not the coach of the Atlanta Falcons.
Give me some more updates. Did we win the Civil War? Who won the Civil War? Was it the North or South?
Yeah, I don't know. You're in Cincinnati. Which side were you guys on?
We were on the North, barely. I did learn something. There was some, like, my mom grew up in the middle of, she grew up on a farm in Fayetteville, Ohio, and I learned from my brother that apparently there were, like, some rogue battles North and South that occurred, like, right around where she grew up. Like, you know, it wasn't like a big battle you hear about in the history books. It was like a rogue. There's a few Northern soldiers here. There's a few Southern soldiers here. We're going to have 10 on 10.
Just Civil War bar fights.
Yeah.
Hey, you're a little close to the Kentucky line to be drinking in this bar, soldier. Grab your musket. Meet me in the parking lot. Loser buys chili.
Right? It's absolutely unreal. What the hell were we talking about?
We were talking about the Josh Jacobs run.
Oh, so he got fined for, or I'm sorry, he got a penalty for it. You never see this on offense. He used his helmet and he went into the DB. I mean, the memes were coming out that basically he was Logan Paul and the DB was Nate Robinson, which I thought was so funny.
Yeah.
Which, hilarious. By the way, we're going to do a full recap of this week's Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., Nate Robinson, Logan Paul, the whole fight thing. We both watched it. So we'll do a whole recap on that later in the episode. But Joe, it was disappointing for me to watch you Raiders lay an egg. because
yeah,
I do
for me too, and I barely watched it.
Yeah, and I do root for them, and I love telling people. I don't know, that's my new thing. I love telling people that Derek Carr lives two doors down from John Gruden.
It's your favorite. This is your favorite rug nug.
But it's just so funny.
Yeah,
it's not even a rug nug. It's a Chris Collinsworth nug.
Yeah.
You know, he said it on air, and I was like,
they both have so much money. How do they not just buy the house in the middle and have it be their like playroom? Let's just go grind on some film over at Bill's house. We gotta get Bill out of here so we can just come together in the backyard and grind.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine that guy who's like just in his backyard barbecuing, and he's got fucking Gruden over one fence and Derek Carr over the other fence doing the fucking home improvement thing. He can only see Gruden's eyes. He can't see his face. And he's just like, you got to stay. It's a tough loss to Atlanta, but you got to keep grinding. Look at that. Look at the cross on your arm and keep the faith, Derek. Just grind.
He played a bad game.
Yeah.
Derek Carr, this is what Derek Carr's game was. It was shades of – which we'll have a great discussion about, Jared Goff. It was a very Jared Goff-esque game.
Yeah.
Can we downgrade him? Like, we've said he's a medium pizza.
You're downgrading Goff below medium pizza.
I don't know, man.
Tombstone frozen?
I guess at times he is medium pizza worthy, and I bet he'll bounce back. But
well, you wanted – I know you were talking about, like, you had on the rundown, like, Stafford move, blah, 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 like, quarterback – and, like – I actually think I wrote down like a list of like where I think would be good fits for a lot of guys. And obviously it's not moving Jared Goff. You'll never be able to move Jared Goff's contract, but I do have a kind of pseudo fit for the Rams.
Who you like?
Do you want to go through all these?
Well, we can do that. I just want to say, cause you mentioned his contract, just so people are aware, Jared Goff's current contract is through the 2024 season. So you have four more seasons after this year. He signed it for $110 million guaranteed, $134 million overall. So, you know, I've been on record, right? At this point, and I tweeted this out, I don't know which contract is the worst contract. Wentz.
It's wrapping up soon, but it's Kirk Cousins. But then beyond that, we can lock – because these – they're worse now because there's more time on them. But don't forget that Kirk Cousins was extended. And they're not even fucking, you know, at least the Rams are competing for a playoff spot.
But Carson Wentz, again, his is through 2024. He had $108 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
With $128 million overall. I mean, they're very similar. It's
Carson
just
Carson Wentz has certainly looked significantly worse. Like, he hasn't had the, you know, the peaks that Jared Goff has had, there's a lot more range. Wentz has just been bad. Wentz has just been bad all around with a couple throws here and there.
Well, the thing about Goff, and I know we said this when he got the contract at the time, that's all Sean McVay.
Right.
And I just think it was such a reckless contract. It was so reckless.
Well, the ramp. And that's the thing, you know, I know you had one particular guy in your mentions yesterday or in the Dirty Sports mentions who's like arguing the Goff stats, the Goff wins, the Goff whatever. It's like, watch the games, man. He doesn't throw – he never makes a pass where you're like, damn, drop that one in the bucket. Like Jared Goff is great at making the easy throw. He's bad at making the tough throw. And a lot of times – he just makes reckless decisions. You could say, and it wouldn't be far-fetched at all, that any quarterback plays a competent game yesterday there, they win that game.
I 100% agree. I do. I think any QB who plays just a decent game. And here's one more thing about Jared Goff, guys. And I don't want this to be like me shitting on Jared Goff, because I know how hard it is. I don't know how hard it is, but I can imagine how hard it is to be a professional quarterback in the NFL. But this is year five, right, Joe? And I've said this, and I'll say it again. I think you know what a guy is by year five.
And you know, you go back to Brady and Belichick. You go back to the most famous quarterback-coach pairing, Brady was Mr. 175 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, protect the ball, win multiple. It was that realm where he was winning 2 Super Bowls, 3 Super Bowls. Then Brady blossoms into a guy who can put up stats and can carry your team and can finish the game with a drive. And Jared Goff is in year 5. He's still in the – now, like, the Rams equivalent of McVay of the 175 game manager is gaudy stats because we out-scheme the other team. But, like, at some point you have to be able to take the ball when you need a score, drive it down, make some difficult throws, and win a game. And Jared Goff got to a Super Bowl. But he didn't win the Super Bowl. And that Super Bowl wasn't, oh, my God, they kicked your ass. Like, you make a couple plays in that Super Bowl, you win the game.
Yeah, it was 3-0 after 3 quarters.
And I know that everything always, you know, get your beers out. Joe mentions Eli Manning, drink. But, like, that's the guy that, like, when I look back at his career, it's like, dude, there was a NFC championship game where he was sacked 6 times and knocked down 15 times. There were Super Bowls where he made crazy throws and crazy plays. It's like, you have to get yourself there, and then you need to rise to the occasion. Jared Goff didn't do that in the Super Bowl. Jared Goff hasn't done that in really too many big games in the fourth quarter, in final drives, down the stretch.
Yeah, and again, year 5, like, I'm not saying guys can't eventually turn it around, but the reason I think someone like him is different is that some guys are building up, right? They continue to build up. He's had the keys to the Porsche for a while now. He's had Sean McVay, the offensive innovator. He's had the weapons. He's had all the pieces around him. If you can't put it together,
and now they got a defense that's better than, they're getting turnovers, they're scoring. Aaron Donald's dominating. Jalen Ramsey had, you know, not his best game yesterday, but has been incredible.
You lose, I'm putting 100% that game on Goff. Yeah. You lose at home to a Niners team who currently doesn't even have a place to play with a backup quarterback. It's just inexcusable. And I don't think he's going to progress. It sucks for Rams fans. Like I said, he's on the books for another 4 years. It's tough to watch.
Do you want to know who my cheap backup sneaky safety valve for the Rams is?
Let's hear it.
Sam Darnold.
Ooh. It's an interesting one.
LA, he's playing in the shadow of the Coliseum. He's going to be cheap. I mean, I can't imagine that the Jets decide to keep Darnold around in a weird, you know, young quarterback room. Like, make the Jets an offer. They're rebuilding. Get Darnold. There are a lot of quarterback gurus out there who believe that Sam Darnold is far better than he's shown in the Jets. I don't think Sam Darnold is like the next, you know, Joe Montana or whatever. But when you look at some of the plays and the tough throws that Sam Darnold has made, it's almost like, in a way, I always talk about how I don't like quarterbacks coming from big schools. It's almost like Sam Darnold had to do a post grad at a terrible college because he just went to a bad team. He gets fucking murdered. And now, you know, you get smacked in the face with a little reality. You get dropped down a peg, bring him home to Southern California, bring him home to LA.
So you're shipping Goff to New York?
No. Goff stays because no one's going to take Goff's contract.
Yeah.
Goff stays. Sam Darnold comes in and potentially competes with, you know, no money invested in him. They did. I mean, they brought in fucking what's his name at one point? They brought in Baldy from Jacksonville, Bortles.
Yeah. Well, you know what I think it is. This is what I think happened. I think McVay overestimated himself. I think what happened was they make the Super Bowl in year two, and he sees that. And I just looked. I mean, those are by far his best numbers, the year the Rams went to the Super Bowl. And I think in his head, he had so much success. He goes 11-5, and they go 13-3. I think he saw how good they were under his system, and he thought, yo, I can really turn this guy into, you know, a top seven, top eight quarterback.
And he's played when he plays well, he plays well. I just think that, you know, it's almost like what were the other options for the Rams? You know what I mean? To bail on a Jared Goff in that situation would have been weird.
I don't think, again, just it was, he still had one more year on the rookie deal. It was just a reckless time. Wentz contract, which happened first.
I more think it's, you know, just not being realistic of what you have in terms of money. Like, I don't think Jared Goff as the quarterback of the Rams is that big a deal, but Jared Goff for that money is. And we've seen it with Kirk Cousins in Washington. We've seen it with Dak Prescott in you know, Dallas. It's like, if you're not sure he's the guy, there are a way to extend these guys with the franchise tag and say, prove it.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that. And I know that they need a face of the franchise for the new stadium and all that, but dude, you got Aaron Donald. You got sure. a face of the franchise.
Yeah.
So I like Goff stays, Darnold comes in and competes.
You like that?
I like it. But a lot of my quarterback movements is guys returning to places that they may feel comfortable.
Where do you like Matthew Stafford?
I mean, the obvious thing to me is Matthew Stafford to Dallas.
Yeah.
But a low-key, sneaky one, Matthew Stafford to a Steelers team if Ben Roethlisberger decides to hang him up.
What about Matthew Stafford? Because he only has one more year. Does he improve the Colts at all?
Probably, but like they already invested in Phillip Rivers for a couple of seasons, and it was Phillip Rivers on a 1 year deal?
2 year.
Yeah. So they invested in him for a 2 year deal. They extended Brissett, and like, are you now they've been better with Rivers. You restarted again. I almost think if it's not Rivers, it's a draft guy.
Yeah.
Frank Reich builds from the ground up. You want all my moves?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say something about the Lions real quick. I mean, they're just such a dumpster fire. Obviously they fire the GM and Matt Patricia. You know, at this point, you can say yours real quick. The top three organizations I want no part of.
Jets and the Lions.
No, it's not even close to that. I totally disagree. It's the Bengals, the Lions, and the Browns.
I mean, how can you have the Browns there and not the Jets? The Browns are a playoff team right now.
1 year, big deal. I'm going on history.
The Jets are going to go 0-16 and have a history of also being terrible.
I agree, but, you know, they made a couple AFC Championship games 10 years ago.
Was a long time ago.
I'm telling you though, man, I would want, what would your three, the Jags will have success here and there, man.
Yeah. I mean, I could say the Bengals, the Jets and the Lions at this point, but like the Jets got to be in there.
You think?
To me. Yeah.
They won't
fire Adam Gase.
I know, but I'm going on the last basically 25 years, a quarter of a century. To me, the Browns have to be in that mix. It's Browns, Lions, and Bengals. I would want no part of those organizations. But
the Browns have the Browns got, you know, finally woke up from, you know, a cocaine bender and stopped letting Hugh Jackson win 0.3 games a season for 4 years or whatever the fuck he did. And seemed to be at least headed in the right direction.
Yeah, you could be right. I could be wrong there. But by far, it's Detroit and Cincinnati. It's embarrassing. Like this whole thing.
So I have in my QB moves, I have Jags, Lions, Jets. Obviously, I put after the Jets. should do draft rebuilds.
Yeah.
You know, where are you? What are you doing? There's no reason to bring in a guy right now to save your team. You're not good. You're not, there's no sign that you're going to be good. Stafford, I've got Cowboys is obvious. He returns to Texas. Obviously, as a Giants fan, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope they stick with Dak forever. I hope they stick with Andy Dalton and Dak. I hope you go two-headed quarterback for all time. And then again, low key, I think be a nice fit on a Steelers team if Roethlisberger hangs it up. Which, let's talk about the Steelers. Like, if you guys go 14-2, but you don't win the Super Bowl, do you come back with Roth like this? Like, how long, if you're Roethlisberger, do you stick around?
Well, I think it depends. If you make the Super Bowl, you don't make any moves.
Right.
If you don't make the Super Bowl, then we can talk.
I like Matt Ryan to the Niners. I think.
Reuniting with his old coach.
Reuniting with his old offense coordinator. And the low-key second play I like for Matt Ryan is Matt Ryan to the Patriots. Matt Ryan returns to Boston.
The team that just destroyed his current team.
I like Dak Prescott. If the Cowboys make a move for Stafford, which I think would be ridiculous not to. I think that the Cowboys improve significantly if you get Stafford. I like Dak to the Falcons or Carolina. I really like Dak to the Falcons.
Carolina? What about Teddy B?
Teddy Bridgewater? Is Teddy Bridgewater the future?
Yeah.
Teddy Bridgewater is the future of the Panthers.
To me, he is. If he can stay healthy.
I mean, I like a RPO Dak Christian McCaffrey. But I actually like Dak to the Falcons the most.
Okay.
A black quarterback in Hotlanta, they'll eat that shit up. I like I said, Darnold to the Rams as a backup. Denver, I say, fuck John Elway. Karma's a bitch. I hope you never have a quarterback. I hope you're playing guys off the practice squad and running the Wildcat forever.
Dude, get over it.
No, I won't, actually. I like Garoppolo if the Niners make a move. If it's not Ryan back to Boston, Garoppolo back to the Pats. He's only got 2 years left on his deal. And then what you could do if you're Belichick is exactly what you did with Brady. You take that Garoppolo deal, you extend it out for a couple of years and make the money less. So you spread that money out. You renegotiate his deal. You take the $25 million he's got for 2 years. You spread it out over like five. Cousins, I think the Vikings deserve Kirk Cousins. The Vikings have put us all through Kirk Cousins as a $100 million quarterback, and I think that they should have to live with that. And I think that he should stay there, and they should stay an 8-8 football team forever. Those are my quarterbacks that should move, teams that should move.
Well, I want to talk about the quarterback debacle that Denver had to go through yesterday. In fact, we'll start it off. I have a call. Let me make sure I have this set up correctly. I'm using a different system today. So we did have a call about this from a dirtball who vented his frustrations, you know, along with a lot of people, just football fans in general. You know, Joe, it goes back to how is the NFL handling this?
So here's, before you play the call, I have had a lot of questions with why some games get to get postponed and some games don't get to get postponed. Why do guys have to play and other guys don't have to play? I still think it's shady and fucked up and weird and whatever, but it seems to me, as far as I can tell, and I haven't seen this like straight up put in writing, but it seems to me the deal is if it's a self-inflicted wound, in a sense, you don't get any sort of benefit of the doubt. Like the Denver quarterback situation was like a maskless disregard for protocol. And now, so you don't get any help with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's the call from the dirtball.
Hey, Joe and Andy. This is Jake from Colorado. Had a quick thing I wanted to say here following this news about the Broncos. And like, I can't even fucking believe it. They're paying fucking Blake Bortles who knows how much goddamn money, and all of the quarterbacks end up getting fucking COVID whatever. How are they not having one of these guys like a designated survivor in some room in an undisclosed location? I mean, we're in fucking COVID for Christ's sake. Like, how does this happen? It's absolutely unbelievable. And the Broncos, who had an outside chance at making a playoff push, now just have no chance. I mean, it's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. So just wanted to get that on off my mind real quick and stay dirty, boys.
Thanks for the call. If you guys want to vent or call about anything, once again, the hotline is 310-359-8365.
I love the designated survivor idea, but love also it. I think the caller should have a designated driver idea because go home, you're drunk. Outside shot at the playoffs.
They had an outside playoffs. Shot. They had an outside shot. A small one. An outside shot.
They were like fucking third in their own division with a lot of teams ahead of them between them and a playoff spot.
It is a small outside shot making the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love the designated survivor. I love the, like, take your, the guy who gets the least amount of, like, practice snaps at quarterback and make them, like, be bubble boy, like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, I felt bad for this kid, this Hinton kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys follow his history. This kid had never played a snap in the NFL ever.
Right. Right. And basically was a wide receiver.
So
obviously a college quarterback.
He wasn't though. So he had
played college quarterback.
Yeah. So he went to Wake Forest. He was a quarterback, which they converted to receiver. So he played wide receiver his senior year and he's been playing receiver on the practice squad in the NFL. It's just, I don't know if you watched any of it.
I did. And honestly,
I felt sorrow. I had sympathy. I was like, this poor kid.
Yeah, I felt bad for him too. I also felt like, dude, if you're gonna go this route, then go it. Like the idea that there was full possessions where they're just going, put Philip Lindsay in the backfield and just like snap the ball to him and let him run. Like, was that ever gonna work?
Why don't you just go full Army or Navy? Wishbone.
Yeah, exactly. Like, dude, you're and you have the Air Force right there. Bring in the Air Force coaching staff. Run some crazy military academy shit.
Yeah.
I heard that they petitioned the league to try to let Rob Calabrese, former University of South Florida quarterback, who's on their coaching staff, quarterback for them.
They did.
Yeah. I feel like every team should have, like, you know how they have an emergency goalie in hockey? Like, every team should have, like, a guy who hangs around the team.
Yeah.
That can be called in an emergency. Like, where the fuck, like, you know, where was, what's his name? The Brock Osweiler. Like, how is
I don't know, man. It's crazy though.
I think Elway should have been forced to play. Fuck that dude.
Still, you're still doing it.
I'm still doing it. I'll never not do it.
Like, dude, you boy's not coming in and playing.
No, I know that. That's fine.
It's been 5 years.
And that's totally fine. But just don't be a fucking fake newser where you're like, I offered him a contract and he didn't take it. It's like, well, that didn't happen. You're a liar, for one. And the idea that you would say that is the most bullshit, reckless thing of all time.
But they're all liars. They're all reckless.
But like, if you go under any Kaepernick thing right now, people are going, hey, you got a contract offer from the Broncos. He got, first of all, again, for the people who don't know, they offered him a salary reduction by, you know, 60%, a 60% salary reduction if they traded for him, which they didn't. And then they said because he didn't accept that, he doesn't want to play football the next year when he's out of football and they don't offer him a contract. So the equivalent right now is like last year, somebody going, Donald Trump, do you want to take a 60% salary reduction and become the mayor of Cincinnati? And him going like, no, I think I'll stick it out as president of the United States. If I lose, I lose, but I'm going to stick it out. And then when he loses, then being like, we don't want you as a mayor of Cincinnati anymore. And people going like, yeah, why would you? He doesn't want to be in politics. If he doesn't take a demotion and a salary cut, he doesn't want to be in politics.
I will say, going back to the NFL protocol real quick, I know what you're saying about self-inflicted, but there does seem to be like there's no major rhyme or reason.
That's, and I agree with you. And that's what I have said, and that's what every fan has said. And all the only rhyme or reason when you do the fucking, you know, when you do the It's Always Sunny in front of the board with all the strings and all the things.
Yeah.
The only thing that you can kind of sort out is that there is something with, like, if you've done it to yourself, if you have broken protocol, then you don't get any help. If you haven't broken protocol and shit still happens. Now, the argument would be, if you didn't break protocol, how did it happen? Which obviously we both know, you know, COVID isn't that simple. But I guess that's the thing. If you have a blatant protocol violation, you don't get any help. That's all that I have been able to figure out.
Can I shit on what they're doing up to the Niners for a second?
Sure.
So San Francisco 49ers, for everybody who didn't see this, found out that they can't practice or they can't play home games for the next 3 weeks, according to the authorities in Santa Clara County where they play. This is ridiculous. Like, dude, this is my thing on all this stuff, and I don't want to go too far down it because it's the same shit over and over again. I understand we have to have certain restrictions, and we have to find this balance, and it's not easy for anybody to make these decisions. But where is the proof that the football team playing is going to make COVID that much worse in that area?
I don't think that that's the question whatsoever. And again, I think I agree with you that it's just as ridiculous, but to play devil's advocate, the thing is, how, if you're taking this stance to do some sort of lockdown for the sake of people's health and whatever, and you are the owner of a diner, a bakery, a gym, a whatever, and you don't give a shit about football, you're not a football fan, it would seem unfair to you for them to say, well, we're going to make an exception for the Niners.
So it was actually just announced, and I see what you're saying, but it's just
I understand that we're a football nation. We love football. That if you ask the people in San Francisco or Santa Clara or whatever, like if you did some sort of democratic vote and said, is everybody cool with the Niners? But the bottom line is, the one person who's like, man, I'm just a lady running a yoga studio, and if the Niners can all get together in tight pants and stretch, why can't I get a bunch of people in tight pants to stretch?
Well, it was announced during our show, they're going to play their next two home games in Arizona. So the craziness of COVID, which has obviously overtaken the country again with the worst outbreak we've had to date, is also not coincidentally, you know, coincided with the worst outbreak for the NFL. They're going to have to play their home games in Arizona.
Which, silver lining with that is, when you factor in Bay Area traffic, it's like 14 minutes further for fans to get to than Santa Clara. If you're coming from the South, it's probably closer. If you're coming from Central California, if you're coming from Santa Barbara to go to a Santa Clara game, yeah, you're probably better off just going to fucking Phoenix.
Yeah. I know. I never thought of that. It's a good point, though.
Yeah.
Are there any other games you want to – I know we've kind of had side discussions through this week, which I've actually really enjoyed. Yeah. But were there any other big games that you wanted to go over?
I mean, not off the top of my head. I mean, what games do we miss that you think are – worthy of talking about? I mean, we obviously had the Thursday games. Those were kind of garbage.
Tough loss for the Cardinals.
Tough loss for the Cardinals, for sure. But honestly, if you're the Cardinals, like, you have to win it. Like, that, to me, that game is like,
well,
you have to win that game.
Why don't we discuss the coaching decision there before the end of the half?
Sure. Oh, you mean the desperate coaching decision where they didn't go for a field goal and they lost the game by 3 points? That one?
Yeah. You know, you have time to run one play before the half ends. You decide not to. You decide not to run a field, kick a field goal. You run the ball. who was it? Kenyon Drake didn't get in the end zone. You go to half, you lose by three.
Again, this is an analytics thing. And the argument on the other side, I'll do it for you, is the percent chance of them winning goes up higher if they get in there than their percent chance of losing if they don't get in, or some crazy analytics thing. But here's the thing. When you play it out, here's what happens. They lose that game 100% because they don't have three more points. If they have three more points, they go to overtime. So the analytics thing is all in this fabrication of life where it could play out all these different ways. But the truth is, the Patriots end the half getting a stop.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Momentum, you go into the locker room. They go into the locker room dejected. You go into the locker room fired up. Analytics don't take into consideration emotion. They don't take into consideration momentum. And the bottom line is, it cost them that game.
Yeah. A game which they had to win.
And we've seen, this is now a couple weeks in a row, a couple games in a row where this keeps happening. Again, I just don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think
you know what? The Giants did it in their game. They go for it on a fourth down close to the goal line. They get in as opposed to kicking a field goal. And to me, again, every game, if this isn't a game of blackjack, there is no book. The Giants, who are 3-7 playing the Bengals, we're not just gonna like cross our fingers and hope we can beat a Bengals team with a backup quarterback. We believe we can fucking beat your ass.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the same thing as a Cardinals team on the come up going west to east versus a Patriots team that are always going to be in a fucking game with a great coach. That's right before halftime.
Take the points. Take the points. When in doubt, I mean, I always say 9 times out of 10, take the guaranteed points.
And it's a different situation if that game has started out, if it's 31-28 going into the locker room and you're looking at, you know, some sort of Chiefs, Rams, Monday night shootout situation. You ain't playing that game in New England.
No. By the way, a quick note within the broadcast. I've seen a couple comments and I responded, and I don't know if it's going to be the same way on the audio. Joe is going to be a little lower than me because he's on, you know, the headphones and I have a microphone. This will be all cleaned up for next episode. FYI.
We had a second mic on its way.
So just want to give everybody a heads up. By next episode, we should be locked and loaded and ready to go on the exact same system. As long as B&H delivers, Joe. I got to go to that store. Where's the main store? Brooklyn?
No, the main store is like right by the garden.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. It's a super store.
Yeah.
It takes hours to walk through.
Dude, their customer service. Can we talk about that? I'm going to give them some love right now. B&H. My dad, Walt got me onto them years ago.
Hasidic Jews.
Dude, they'll sit on the phone with you and you'll be like, hey, I'm interested in this microphone or this headset or whatever it is. They'll talk you through it.
Yeah.
It's great. So shout out to B&H. Okay. Let's move on from the NFL discussion to the big fight Saturday night, Joe. You're not too happy.
I just want to know how you feel about, I mean, obviously it was your brother, but I didn't pay the money to watch this.
Yeah.
And I can't, well, I honestly can't believe people did.
Well, look, for us, it was nice. My brother Brad said, hey man, I'm going to invite all the brothers over, which is rare. With five of us and everybody but me has family and kids. And I think this is the first time the five of us have been together since my dad's funeral, to be honest. Like normally there's two or three. So he said, hey, I'm going to invite everybody over. I didn't think everybody would make it. So we all went to my brother's basement to watch the fight. And I knew, you know, basically, you know how it is. it's the fight, but it's 3 or 4 hours of just roasting each other and ball busting when you're with the brothers and nonstop, just jokes. But that for me, it was like a good family bonding experience.
But I enjoyed
the Logan Paul Nate Robinson fight.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. My thing on, like, you know, because you messaged me and you were like, you know, any chance you would get this to watch it?
Because it was like, $50.
And I was like, look, first of all, I'll illegal stream it, if anything, which I ended up doing. And I watched an illegal stream, then it cut out. Then I watched somebody broadcasting it on their Instagram. It's like a whole other thing. But shout out Ben Sterner. But the thing about not paying for it mostly was like, did you see the rules beforehand? First of all, they're not going to announce. Basically, we knew going into it, it was a draw. It said that they were not going to have a winner. If a guy gets cut, the fight's over, and they're not going to try to knock each other out, I don't even know what I'm watching.
But is that true? Because when you watch the fight, they were going, like, Tyson was going at it, man.
Or was he?
Where is your information coming from? I didn't see
this,
that.
This was like kind of this. I saw this posted as like the rules of the fight, which is basically they knew, and I don't know if they like snuck it out there or if they didn't want to publicize that and somebody like read that and shared it, but that it was always basically going to be a draw, that they were not going to announce a winner, that a cut would stop the fight, and that they weren't going to try to knock each other out. Which they kind of hinted at in the post fight where Tyson's like, you know, Roy Jones, like, those body blows are still fucking crazy. But it's like Tyson has a signature move. He didn't pull it out the whole time.
Well, if you look at the scoring, one judge scored Roy Jones Jr. as the champ. And this is pretty funny, this guy's background. He is an ex-boxing champ and, he had a broken neck, like he recovered from a broken neck. So I got all this information from my one brother, and he said, like, dude, this guy probably has God knows how many brain issues.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's voting as far as the scorecard. Obviously, Tyson clearly won the fight.
Right.
Without a doubt.
Right. And just being the aggressor and in just throwing more punches and whatever. But that was the thing. It's like, if you know that going in, that they're not going to, that this is going to be a draw, it's like, fuck, what do we want? Basically, you better hope you got your $50 worth watching Nate Robbins get knocked the fuck out, which I got to imagine Mike D'Antoni is literally masturbating to.
I mean, Nate Robbins got his ass kicked. I couldn't stop laughing at the memes.
I know.
Logan, see, I was rooting for Nate.
Yeah, you got to be.
You know, I'm not rooting for the 23-year-old white YouTube star kid. Yeah. Like, I'm rooting for Nate. But, I mean, he got his ass whooped.
He did.
Nate Robinson got his ass whooped.
He got, I mean, he was dead.
So Nate, my brother.
Has Nate Robinson gotten up? That's the thing. Like, Nate Robinson was down for the count.
Even before he was destroyed, like when he took that hit on the back of his head.
Yeah.
I mean,
and a lot of people are like, oh, Nate, like, be careful, like, Nate will still kick your ass. I'm like, dude, I don't know if that's true at this point. And Nate got, like, this YouTuber put Nate into a coma.
Like, Nate Robinson, it straight up out of the movie Friday. Like, he took a punch from Debo.
And he's now, like, an internet meme. Like, he's now an internet meme because he literally got knocked out by an internet meme.
Yeah.
All I can imagine is like the TikTok right now is like, oh no, oh no. Like the clips of Nate going down to the, oh no, like rip Nate. And honestly, as much as I was rooting for him, because like, again, you don't want some YouTuber, like this guy's out there talking shit to everybody. I'll fight anybody. And honestly, he proved himself because he hit Nate with a hammer. So, but yeah, like, but as a guy who watched Nate recklessly take like fall away threes and lose tons of games, like I did take a little pleasure in that.
There's a little karma for you.
Yeah. fucking, you know, there's a little Mike D'Antoni karma there.
Did you watch any of the press conference or post match press conference?
No.
So Logan Paul goes on there. My brother sent this to me. I mean, you talk about someone who is out of touch. He goes on this rant how it's perfect that they were fighting, you know, the match before Tyson. Basically, he can relate to Mike Tyson. So you have a white kid who was born and raised in Cleveland saying he can relate to what Mike Tyson went through, who, as we know, had one of the worst childhoods of all time, grew up in Brownsville, which is like one of the worst parts of New York. You know, his mom was smoking crack at like the youngest age. The guy was, you know, dealt a really rough hand in life. And you have
maybe he can relate because like people who follow YouTubers are like pigeons or something. I don't know. Maybe he's just like raising his own flock of little pigeons.
That's what I want to see. After all that, I want to see Logan Paul fight Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson will kill him.
Yeah, I mean, it would be fantastic. It'd be great. Is that the next? Are they talking about this at all?
No, but I want this. This is what the Ruther brothers decided. We want to see Mike Tyson because he said, I'll fight anybody. You know, he said in the post-fight interview, he said Conor McGregor, he's tossing out all these huge – by the way, Conor McGregor would eat you for lunch, dude.
I agree with that.
He would destroy you. But I was impressed. Dude, Tyson's speed. Can we talk about that? Mike Tyson's speed at age 54 was so impressive to watch. I enjoyed that. And Roy Jones wanted no part of that fight and just kept leaning and hugging on Tyson. And that post-game interview, post-match interview, I could not stop laughing.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I think it would have been way more exciting if you felt like somebody had a chance to get knocked out. It's like, also, you guys are in your 50s and you're doing this for a bunch of money. Like, why aren't you just boxing? Why are there the weird rules of like you can't cut each other and Mike Tyson or Roy Jones Jr. need their face for something? Does Mike Tyson can't have a cut owning like a weed farm?
You know how I described the set? I want to talk about the set for a minute. My little brother put it best. He goes, the set all black and kind of like the smoke. He goes, it looks like the set from the Chappelle shows when it's like the Rick James or the Prince. Yeah. Like where it's an all black background, but you have like smoke screen. It looked like a set from one of those episodes.
Yeah.
But Snoop Dogg was amazing.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg was great.
Can we get Snoop Dogg?
His commentary was awesome. Him going out there and singing Drop It Like It's Hot from 2005 was a little awkward, but like.
Oh, his commentary.
Yeah.
Was so funny. I want Snoop commentating every game.
Yeah, I'm so into that.
Who was the guy with the mullet?
I don't know.
So basically Triller, who is trying to.
Yeah, what is Triller?
So this is what they are. They claim they're TikTok for adults. Like, okay. Did you see that one dig that Mario Lopez, which I don't know what Mario Lopez was doing there.
Well, I assume harvesting children's blood so he can keep looking like he's 31 for the Saved by the Bell reunion show where he's apparently, if you've seen the clips, he's apparently the coach of a high school football team that only has three players and one of them's a girl. Like, why in this lock? How are you fielding what happened at Bayside High? Did they cut football and now they bring it back? They brought it back and they play 6-on-6. How can you be in a football locker room and there's only like four kids in there?
I did watch one trailer.
Is this the quarterback room? Is this like, what is this? You don't have enough players to field a team. Get Screech playing tight end or something. Screech is open.
And he's jobless. Like, throw Screech in here. Yeah, Mario Lopez hasn't aged at all.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you the Mario Lopez story that I have?
No. Is it from the hotel?
It's from when I used to live in Las Vegas.
Okay. So
he came in to do a promotional thing at the spa I was working at Caesars, when I worked at Caesars Palace. And I've talked about Salvatore Geppi.
You walked into the massage room and he was drinking blood directly from the adrenal gland of a child with Ellen.
So I talked about Sal, right? Like the mob connected barber. I like how I just gave his full name out. Like I'm dead.
I think he's aware.
Yeah. So I was always cool with Sal. So Mario Lopez came into our spa to do some, I don't know what they were doing, you know, some promotional piece. So, you know, they're basically doing a shave and taking pictures and a video, whatever it is. And when Sal's putting the shaving cream on him for, you know, this traditional shave,
he's Mario, like, I'm not going to use a real blade because for somehow you're the only Mexican who's never going to stitch a facial hair. So we'll just do it with the back end of a toothbrush.
Mario said to him, and I wasn't in there at the time because Sal ended up telling me later at work. He said, this guy comes in here and I'm ready to shave him. And he goes, not above my face. That's the money spot. Okay. Like not above his neck. Sorry. Not above his neck. Yeah. So he didn't want Sal to touch his face with the blade just on the neck. Yeah. And Sal hated him for that. Like, how dare this guy come into my barbershop and tell me how to shave him?
This guy comes in completely bald. He's clearly had his face lasered, all the hair lasered off his face. You can't tell. I'll cut your neck, Mario Lopez. Yeah, I'll cut your neck. You fucking, like the Johnny Depp movie, I'll cut your neck. I'm the fucking the barber.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, he's wrong how to say that, dude. He's going to slit your throat, bro.
You don't think I fucking killed an 80s TV star before? I fucking killed. You ever notice you don't fucking see Rick Schroeder anymore? I fucking took care of Rick Schroeder. Remember the fat brother from the Hogan family? We got Justin Bateman. We got Justine Bateman. Then we got the fat one. Where's the fat one? I'll tell you where the fat one is. He's fucking dead. He came here and told me not to fucking cut his mustache, and I fucking slit his throat, and I threw him in a fucking hole in the desert. You remember the fucking kid from fucking Family Ties? All of a sudden, they got a little kid with a fucking bowl cut. Like, all of a sudden, these 60-year-old parents have a fucking 3-year-old. Yeah, he came in here one time, and he was like, hey, I want a cut, but I want to keep it a fucking bowl cut like I had on Family Ties. So I fucking cut his ear off. I fucking threw him in a ditch. I got a whole fucking museum of 80 stars out in the fucking desert.
Oh, man. I want more of those fights, though. Like, I want more Tyson fights, I should say.
You remember hanging with Mr. Cooper? I hung Mr. Cooper. Mr. Cooper's fucking dead. I fucking hung him. I hung his whole fucking basketball team.
There's too many racial overtones with that one, Sal. I don't know about that one.
Hey, I wasn't even saying, that's fucking you with the racism. That's not me. I was just doing a fucking pun because his show was hanging with Mr. Cooper.
I know you were, Sal. I know you were. Sal. I wonder what Sal's up to these days.
He's fucking killing everybody from Salute Your Shorts. This guy comes in my fucking barbershop. He goes, hey, dude. I didn't know he was referencing the show he was on. I thought he was calling me dude. Hey, I'm a fucking 65-year-old man. You don't call me dude. I put two bullets in him. I threw him in a ditch. Then they told me he was on a show called Hey, Dude. I don't fucking know.
That's pretty accurate.
You ever seen Pete and Pete? I killed both Petes. I fucking murdered him. Murdered one Pete, and I fucking murdered the other Pete.
I had to show Sal one time how to listen to a voicemail. I'm not even lying. He's like, "Yo, Andy, come in here." He's like, "I think somebody left me a message. How do I listen to it?" I'm like a voicemail? He's like, "Yeah, like a voicemail. How do I listen to it?" And then I'd show him, and he'd always say, "You're a good kid. You're a good kid, Andy." He'd always pat me on the back. "You're a good kid, Andy. Now, some of them other kids I don't like some of those other kids in the spot. You're a good kid."
Love it.
You know who he used to cut? He used to cut Ryan Reynolds. Like, he built some weird relationship with Ryan. When Ryan Reynolds was on, what?
Two guys grilling a pizza shop?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He used to share with me all these Ryan Reynolds stories. Like, he loved Ryan Reynolds. That's a guy he did not kill.
Yeah. He's like, you know who I did kill, though? You know, it was on at the same time as Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Shop, and it was always fucking stealing their ratings. Remember Jonathan Silverman from fucking Weekend at Bernie's? He was on the show The Single Guy. I fucking murdered him. You notice there hasn't been a fucking Weekend at Bernie's remake in a couple of years? Jonathan Silverman, fucking dead.
My brother Greg and I rewatched that the other day.
Weekend at Bernie's?
It had been a long time. It's the most ridiculous plot, Prano.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, the most ridiculous plot is Weekend at Bernie's 2, where he's fucking dancing for voodoo.
I don't think I've seen the second one.
Oh my God, it's so ridiculous. I used to do a great impression of it though. Like he's a dead body, but whenever this fucking song comes on, he kind of comes alive and he fucking starts bouncing. And I used to just lay face down on the ground and then wake up to the fucking voodoo song, start walking around. Did a good Weekend at Bernie's 2 impression. I used to fucking kill in middle school.
Dude, that was a dance. Remember like 6 or 7 years ago, 8 years ago, do you remember the Bernie dance became a thing?
Like the fucking back wiggle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you watched the match this week? I heard it was really good.
So I did watch, I watched the match, and what I put on the rundown is it was everything that I wanted the Tyson fight to be. It's like, so now there might be people out there going, yeah, it's been good for a while. I didn't watch either of the first two because, you know, I can't stand Tiger Woods. So the first one was just Tiger and Phil, and then it was Tiger, Phil, Brady, and Peyton. But I love this one. I actually thought this one was great because you had two very good amateur golfers in Steph and Peyton Manning taking on Phil Mickelson and Barkley. Barkley's a 25 handicap. Barkley's terrible. And they were doing like an alternating shot thing. And it was really, I just thought what was the most impressive thing of it was the production. I mean, the production of these guys on AirPods talking throughout a round. It was everything I envisioned for, you know, the Dirty Sports match play between Tug and Laz following Golfgate that has now been shut down because there's a gag order on discussing Golfgate. But I just think the production of it is awesome. Watching these guys, hearing these guys, the whole, just the production value of it is awesome. And then the second thing about it that was fantastic was watching Mickelson coach Barkley through every shot was super fun. And honestly, without Barkley, you know, I didn't watch again like the Peyton, you know, Brady one, but like without the Barkley factor, it wouldn't have been as fun. And watching Mickelson just like zen coach Barkley through it was really fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And I just thought the production value was awesome. The golf course looked awesome. Phil Mickelson is so fun. Him and Barkley is such a great pairing. Peyton and Steph are both great guys.
I find Steph boring though.
Yeah, but they're great guys and they're funny and they're like, you know, ribbing Charles. I mean, Peyton is roasting Charles the whole time, and Peyton's hilarious.
Yeah, Peyton's great.
And Peyton is apparently a 5 handicap, which is pretty darn good. But like Peyton Manning is Mr. Steady. Like the guy was hitting fairways and like nice approach game, nice short game, but like slow and steady wins the race. Steph kept putting him in bunkers. Steph didn't play his best. And I've seen Steph play at that Tahoe tournament and like hit some insane shots. Steph's a really good golfer, and a lot of people are kind of roasting him. The thing this weekend was a lot of people roasting guys that and gals doing things that they could never think about doing. Like people coming at the Vanderbilt kicker. Like, dude, she was on the field for one kick because Vanderbilt couldn't score a fucking point. She should have played quarterback.
Well, she was supposed to do a squib kick. Like that was scheduled.
I know. And people are fucking like, yeah, what the fuck was that?
Look, I've always said it, man. If somebody can do something, who cares? Like, I don't care. Like, the idea that a woman couldn't, if a woman is good enough to play on the team, I don't care the sport. I'm all for it.
And obviously, she got on the team because of a dire situation.
Sure.
And also, they squib kicked it so that she didn't get her ass kicked. And that's fine, too. Like, obviously, they're not going to do that strategy. They're not going to have a full-time female kicker unless the female kicker could take a hit so they don't have to squib kick it every time.
Yeah.
But she was there to kick field goals and to kick extra points, and Vanderbilt fucking didn't score a single point or get into field goal range.
And then their coach got fired the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, the guy's roasting her, and the guy's roasting Steph, who fucking – at one point, he hit a 400-yard drive fucking straight into the water. But it was like, dude, he hits the ball farther and straighter than most people fucking watching this shit.
Dude. He's
a pretty darn good golfer.
Dude, the Twitter sphere is just full of – I mean, look at that guy last night I just kept going after about Mitchell Trubisky. Like, I'm not saying I'm better than Mitchell Trubisky, but to, like, defend him, it's just I don't get people defending what's right in front of you. Like, Trubisky's not a good quarterback. It hasn't worked out.
Yeah, medium pizza.
He's not even a medium pizza.
Yeah.
He's the personal pan that you used to get at Pizza Hut for reading books. The booking, right? Wasn't that what it was called?
Yeah.
That's what he is. Hey, I read 6 books and I'm in the first grade. I get a free personal pan pizza at Pizza Hut. That's what he is.
Mitchell Trubisky is a literacy reward.
And even as a kid, you knew it wasn't the best pizza. You're like, ah, it's pizza. It's like you always say, right?
Yeah.
It's pizza.
Still
pizza.
Yeah.
Still pizza.
Technically.
I mean, technically.
But yeah, he was bad. And it's like, oh, he has obviously a big turnover plate where like people are like, oh, his face mask. It's like, guys, who cares? Just because you get so now somebody face masks you should fumble?
They never touched the ball on that play. It definitely was a face mask. Obviously, I went at it with a dirt ball. Like I didn't say go at it.
We have a Goff defender. We have a nonstop Goff defender. And you're like, dude, if you don't think paying Goff $100 million guaranteed was reckless and has set the team back in terms of success, you're not watching.
You're not watching.
And then that guy goes, oh, he's worlds better than Matthew Stafford. Well, go home. You're drunk, dude.
By the way, I didn't see all that.
Did Matthew Stafford have sex with your sister? Or
no, I didn't see any of these exchanges.
Is Goff your cousin?
Yeah. And I love the record when I keep posting.
Jared Goff is not better than Matthew Stafford, for the record.
No.
Let me say that clearly.
No, but I love that I keep posting. You know, obviously I have a thread going for a lot of this season on Jared Goff not deserving $100 million. I love when people say you're not watching the game. Hey, dumb shit. Of course I'm watching the game. I'm the one posting the clips.
Yeah.
If I wasn't watching.
You're a Rams fan.
Yeah.
Amongst other teams, but you're a Rams fan.
I always have the Rams games on. And you and I are always texting about it.
Yeah.
Look at that golf pass. It was terrible. Look at that golf.
My girlfriend's a Rams fan, so we always have the Rams game on as well.
Yeah, yesterday was tough to watch.
Yeah.
Especially when
anybody else who's a competent quarterback wins that game.
Well, guys, if you want to leave your feedback to us directly, again, the hotline is 310-359-8365. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The Dirty Sports. Got some great new iTunes reviews. I'll be getting those koozies out this week. I promise. I have some long overdue ones, probably from way pre or the start of COVID. I'll get those out. So drop your Twitter or Instagram handle in that review, and we'll get those out for you.
If you guys have stuck around for plugs, in just a couple hours, I will be participating in the virtual Boston Comedy Festival. I haven't done a ton of virtual shows since, pandemic began, but I just did one the other night as a prep for this. Boston Comedy Festival is the first festival I ever participated in. God knows what year it was. Honestly, it might've been like 2003. First festival I ever did, a great comedy festival. They're doing it virtually this year, so I'll be doing a set on that. Go to my Instagram or go to my Twitter and there'll be a link there. I think tickets cost something, but it should be fun. And it's a contest. I'm doing like 5 minutes, and if I do well, I move on. So if you want to watch some virtual comedy at 3 p.m. Pacific time, go check that out.
Cool. All right, Dirtballs, that is our show for this Monday. We will be back again on Thursday in December. We're already here, Joe. December is already here. Can you believe it?
2020 is almost over.
Oh, thank God. All right, Dirtballs, have a great few days. We'll see you in a couple days. And as always, stay dirty.